This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? And you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 116. Today is Thursday, September 7th. We got a fun show ahead, keeping it loose, and we are going to keep the spirit of accountability, which we love to do here. Talking about our recent calls in mid-July when we looked at rest of season players. And this was one of those shows, Steve. We did a couple of them with Is It Legit, Hitter Edition, Pitcher Edition. And it's one of those where we said, we'll have to come back and look at how this is later this season, see if some of these predictions were right or wrong. And I think it's a fun topic because, again, down in this time of year, you can kind of lose track of who's doing what, but these were the guys about 6-8 weeks ago that we were kind of circling saying, keep an eye on what they do the rest of the way, we'll have to reevaluate it, things like that. So it's kind of looking at a lot of those question marks and grading how they've done, and also in a way grading how we've done on making recommendations here. So thank you all for joining us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. Steve, good to see you, man. Late in the game. It's going to be a fun show, though.
Yeah, it's fun. I think something that distinguishes us from all the other fantasy baseball shows out there, not that there's anything wrong with them, but I think we try to be more actionable rather than reactionary and recapping what happened. We try to give, okay, here are some guys that we like and that you should add. And we always sort of say that we need to go back and look and see how those picks are. And I'm glad we're doing a show that is looking back and seeing, okay, this suggestion was good, this one wasn't as good. What was our process here that made this the right call? What was our process here that made this the wrong call? So cool to do this, and I think it'll help us get better at this sort of stuff. And I think it's fun to sort of look back, too. I know people joke about taking victory laps, but it is cool to look back and say, oh, wow, that was a great recommendation. I know it's sort of worthless if you do this and you put it out there and you're constantly wrong. There's no value in that. So, you, what's the point in looking back at the right ones, right? But it's still good to have some accountability and look at our process and talk about these suggestions that we had, because I think after every one of these episodes we're like, oh yeah, let's come back on this in a few weeks and see how we did.
And we don't always do it right.
Yeah. It's hard because there's so much that goes on in this fun game of ours. You know, we were just talking off air about the drama in both of our leagues, and it's never ending, this game we love. So cool to look back at some of these suggestions.
And it seems like, you know, that coming off of All-Star break, to me, is like the deep breath before the plunge, where it's really your last chance to make lasting changes that can impact your leagues, your teams, things like that. And then at this stage in the season, it is a good moment, and it's a unique moment because we don't have the full end-of-year season stats, so we can't, you know, assess our bold predictions or talk about the season collectively and talk about, you know, standouts, surprises, things like that. But at the same time, if you're going to do a show about, you know, what to add, what to drop, if you're still alive in your leagues, you are already deep into it. And it really comes down to like a 1 week or 2 week stream. So it just seems like it's a little bit less about longevity and a good opportunity for us to do some of those fun retrospective shows that aren't as macro as the full season, but a little bit more of, okay, is there anything we can learn next year when we're in that same time of year, things like that. Cause I know it's not on the rundown, Steve, but even ones like, I don't know, when we were looking at strength of schedule, that's a good example of, you know, do some of those guys actually pan out? Like we were talking about.
Like did we have the right process when doing it? Or is it just as simple as go to tankathon and sort by strength of schedule? Or do we have to do something a little bit different there? Yeah.
Yeah. But like that's one that comes to mind is like we talked about how the White Sox have the softest schedule remaining a month and a half ago. And there you have Elvis Andrus hitting .333 in the past month. I know Benintendi was on a tear for a minute. Oh, yeah. So like things like that, we would never actually look back and say, you know, how did Elvis Andrus do after we recommended him? Because we're talking about the bigger strokes of, you know, the fantasy narrative or script. So it's a fun show, and it's kind of a deja vu in a way, because some of the rundown is a lot like what we did 6 weeks ago, mm-hmm. 8 weeks ago. So yeah, I think it'll be fun. More generally, Steve, how's it going? Are you still tracking? Most of my leagues are now dead from the industry standpoint, or the home league where I'm just in third, fourth place. Are you still tuned in, dialed in, or are you taking a break?
I'm still dialed in. I'm still dialed in. Okay. My teams aren't doing that well. I admittedly should have probably paid more attention to some of the leagues that I was in tighter races in that turf industry league, I've sort of fell out of the running there, probably half due to my own lack of effort, which is sad. I know our dynasty league, like, it's kind of over as far as winning it, but we've fell more to the middle of the pack there, and probably should both give a little bit more of a collective effort in that league too.
Sure.
Next year. But yeah, I've honestly been in tune with my home league, just cause my team's been
watching
so,
it close.
So yeah. Good. And watching the stats there, and just watching baseball in general. So it's been nice, but yeah, like it, as far as like sort of circle back to the topic and my broader thought about it, but it's so micro in all leagues now, right? Like in head-to-head leagues, it's either the playoffs or even further along in the playoffs, that there's not that many teams left. So the waiver wire is a totally different animal, and you're just micromanaging to your matchups and like dropping anyone and everyone if you need to. And then for head-to-head, for roto leagues, like you're micro focusing on just the categories that you could gain ground in or need to defend. So it's a totally different type of year. And I think it's a good time of year. And I think it's a good time to sort of do stuff like that, because once the off season comes, like, okay, we recap it and then we start to preview. Like, it happens that quickly that there's not really much time to like go back and look at sort of recommendations in that process. So I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those tuning in still in your leagues, yeah, go pick up Jordan Lawler who got promoted today. So yeah, we'll move to the actual agenda for the show. And we're going to kind of break this up into some of our calls that we hit on, or in other words, they were good suggestions, good analysis. And then some of the ones that we missed on, and just keep it kind of loose. Honestly, we'll pull up player pages, talk through kind of our perspective, if anything's changed long term, all that good stuff. And for the most part, these were episodes 110 through 112, where we looked at it. Are we buying it? The breakout hitters, and is it legit for the pitchers? And then the episode 112 was desperate ads. Desperate times call for desperate ads. So the one that we talked about in several shows, Steve, was Nolan Jones, who I know we were very high on initially, just because of the prospect pedigree, the fact that he was combining power speed, especially the speed. And of course, the Coors environment is kind of the eternal tiebreaker, and we cited that we were overall excited. We threw out Tyler O'Neill comps. I think what really surprised me personally the most, and I know we talked about, was the batting average has been like north of 280 for the season for Nolan Jones. And so, you know, this was all talked about July 27th. And since July 27th, Nolan Jones has hit 291 with an 896 OPS, 5 homers and 6 steals in 36 games. So maybe a slight tick lower on homers, but the steals are up. He does it in bunches. He's probably a better roto play because he kind of gets hot and cold. But the strikeout rate was what we were looking at closely, Steve, and it's ever so slightly improved to just beneath the 30% mark at 29.9%. So, yeah, I don't know how much we've learned about Nolan Jones, but I think we're, if anything, seeing that it's even more sticky, that this is kind of sustainable. Despite the roller coaster, we know he's going to run a high BABIP. He's going to have power speed. And I think, at least my personal thought, is that Nolan Jones is still very much worth that kind of volatile flyer with a really high ceiling for next year. But talk to me about Nolan Jones since we last talked about him.
Yeah, I feel like this has been like the Nolan Jones show. I feel like he's come up on that many episodes, maybe because he was dropped around that time. And we also talked about the rocky schedule and having a lot of home games that made him attractive. And, you know, just the fact that he's a bit of a polarizing player because he does strike out a lot. So there are some underlying red flags. But all in all, I think that if you bought the dip on Nolan Jones in July, you're reaping the benefits now. Yeah, that might be a different shape than just the power, but I mean, that line is league winning. It's a 5-category stud. Yes, there's still strikeout concerns, but there have been some improvements. And if you pull up like his rolling strikeout chart, either on Savant or Fangraphs, where you can do like a rolling average, he's hovering closer to league average. At least he's having some dips where he's striking out, you know, 20% of the time over a 10-15 game period, and his peaks aren't like the 45% that it was in middle of June when he was, or middle of July when he was being dropped. The peaks are more at like 32%, things like that. So it's some improvement in the strikeout rate. I know we talked about how there were a lot of called strikes and that maybe there potentially could be some gain in strikeout rate if he was a bit more aggressive. But yeah, I mean, over the course of the year, like looking at that rolling chart, it tells a story of improvement that you might not see if you just look at the overall, you know, what, 32% strikeout rate on the year. Close to 33%. So there is a bit of a story here where the strikeout rate is improving to like that number that we hope for, like a 28 to 30% strikeout rate. Like that's a huge difference, and that could help him carry over these skills into next year. That, you know, the more I look at Nolan Jones, the more I'm going to overlook the strikeout rate and hope that these tools carry over and you get a great fantasy player that plays half his home games at Coors Field.
Yeah, and like on kind of the month-by-month splits, it's actually interesting with the K's improving a little bit. His chase rate actually did go up in August, but so did the barrel rate. 20% barrel rate in August versus the 12 that it had been sitting at in June and July. So if anything, I think we're just kind of confirming how much of a masher he is. And yeah, playing in Coors certainly helps. So yeah, Nolan Jones, I think more of the same. But if anything, we were talking about the high BABIP on that show, Steve, and saying I think it was at a 402 at the time. And then since then, if you run the splits, the BABIP is at a 405. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just what you were saying originally on the show is like he's going to run a high BABIP. He hits it hard and he's in Coors. So, you know, I don't think you can bank on that in next year's drafts, but at least we know that it's not a fluke, right? It's going to look something higher than the rest of the league average. And, you know, maybe he's not 285, 290, but maybe he's safe to count on for above 250 with all that power speed, which is definitely worthwhile. So anything else to add on Jones there?
No, we've talked about him plenty.
So much, yeah. Well, let's move to Chaz McCormick, kind of a unheralded contributor this season. In 94 games this year, a 287 average, 19 homers, 14 stolen bases. And since we discussed Chaz McCormick and kind of poked holes, we were being critical because, you know, he's a late bloomer, so to speak, age 28, and having certainly his best year, breakout year. We kind of pegged him as an outfield three. We talked about how he had kind of a higher floor than Jones. And I think Christopher Morel was bunched in with him, but a lower ceiling and a little bit of a vanilla pick. But since we talked about him, he's hit an 861 OPS, six homers, three stolen bases. And yeah, it's just been more solid production from McCormick in a really good Astros lineup. What are we thinking here? I mean, is this going to be a target next year, or are we thinking we're still skeptical?
It depends because, and I think we voiced some concerns about this, but McCormick's playing time has taken a bit of a hit since Brantley's been back, since Alvarez has needed to DH a little bit. I think he's sat a lot often recently. And, you know, Dusty Baker is sometimes frustrating with that. You know, it took him years to bat Kyle Tucker higher than like sixth in the lineup when he was like a first round fantasy pick, which was just crazy. So yeah, there is a bit of a playing time concern. They have a crowded outfield. They also have like a situation at catcher where they like to get Yonner Diaz some DH at bats, and you know, they like to play Maldonado for the framing and the fielding and all that. So there is a bit of playing time that I think if the Astros sort of go in with the clear plan next year that, you know, if Brantley isn't there or if they make another move to sort of free up playing time.
Yeah, Mauricio Dubon
plays a lot. Yep. He is. So I like the skills overall and think that he is an underrated and could be a very good fantasy asset. Just a little bit concerned about their role.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we talked about how he's above average in a lot of things. I think the K rate at 26% is still a little bit higher than you really want to see there. But yeah, if he were to be guaranteed playing time, which is a big if, I think it's probably safe to view him as like a 2015 guy. I mean, I guess the only thing is the steals in the past have always been lower, and this year the 14 has been, you know, triple what he's ever done in the past. But he's running more. He has 18 attempts on the season. He'll probably end up with high teens on steals for the year. So yeah, I could see it being a value pick next year just because you know, that it's not quite, he's probably going to be drafted in a range where you would look for a lot of high ceiling guys and upside plays. And McCormick could be one that just kind of continues on with what he's doing. So yeah, I guess more than anything, just a note that when he has been playing since we last talked about him, it's looked really, really good. And we were skeptical at the time. Has anything changed, Steve, that in drafts you're still going to be more interested in Nolan Jones than Chaz McCormick?
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be a high man on Nolan Jones next year.
Across the industry.
Maybe not across the industry, but, you know, I could see myself talking myself into grabbing him a few rounds earlier just to ensure I get some shares.
Some bold predictions, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, I could see it written already, yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, another one we talked about on the Is It Legit edition was Cody Bellinger. And this one we had admitted, you know, less actionable given that he's not on waiver wires or anything like that. But where we landed, Steve, in assessing a very strange Bellinger season where he cut the strikeout rate, some of the traditional hard hit metrics didn't look as good, but it kind of felt like a Chris Bryant type of approach change with the Cubs. Probably a little lazy analysis there, but it reminded us of just, you know, whether it's Yelich with weird, you know, plate profile evolution, things like that. Bellinger, where we landed was, we were saying an outfielder too. And yeah, you have to look at, since we talked about him, how great Bellinger has been. 327 batting average with 9 homers, 7 steals. The strikeout rate has further dropped from 17%, which we loved at the time, down to 13%. And yeah, is Cody Bellinger even better than an outfield too, is the question. What can we expect moving forward?
How early is Cody Bellinger going to go in drafts next year? Like, he has the name brand. He's going to have an amazing line. He's missed a month of the season, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, 109 games played compared to the 130 or whatever it is.
If you're really picking nits, you kind of could say, oh, well, you know, just 24 homers. But he got hurt in a time where, like, he was just stepping into that power with this and mixing it with that new approach, right? Like, he had a few homer binges, right, where he homered, like, you know, in 5 of 7 games. He's kind of in the middle of that right now already, right? Just looking at the splits by month, he had 7 homers in April, didn't homer in May or June, and then had 8 in July, 5 in August, and has 3 already in September. So
4. I think he homered tonight.
Yeah. Homered tonight. So what is that? That's 20 of his, or right, if his quick math right here.
17
of his 24 homers since July. Yeah. That's, you know, that's a pace that's going to put him closer to 35-40 than the 24 that he's on. The 0 homers were in May and June were, you know, that was when he was hurt. He only played 25 games in those 2 months. So, yeah. Is Cody Bellinger like a borderline first rounder?
Wow. Well, let's look. Let's look here, Steve. So second half, let's just look at month over month on the barrel rate. So he had a 10.5% barrel rate in April. I don't think he barreled a single ball in May and June.
And that was 25 games. So, yes, he was hurt, but he still played 25 games during that time. Did he have a lingering injury? What was his injury?
This year the injury was a knee contusion in April.
So he didn't go on the IL until June. Is that correct?
Looks like May 19th.
May 19th. Went. Okay. And then came back. Probably came back and it was still bothering him once he got healthy.
The power drought came again. In May leading up to that might have been related to it. I guess, like, looking at kind of the splits on barrel rate, what's discouraging a little bit is that the barrel rate was still just like a 6.5% in July, a 5.5% in August. So, you know, maybe these are just, if he's just yanking these and it's like, where's the launch angle? I'm just trying to see if there's been anything that really looks like a drastic. Okay. So hard hit rate. In June, 19%. July 34%, 27% in August, and 35% so far, just a week into September. So I wouldn't go first round, but I think, the counting stats have been really good too. It'll be age 29 season. I don't know, man. I mean, if I were to throw a dart, I think maybe like a late third, early fourth? Does that seem late to you?
Yeah, I don't think you're getting them if that's the case. Like, just based on dollar value alone on the Rasball Player Raider, as far as outfielders go, it's Acuna, Mookie Betts, Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Kyle Tucker, Cody Bellinger. And that's with Cody Bellinger missing a month of the season.
So he's like outfielder six or seven.
Outfielder six right now. I'm probably not taking him above those guys, but
no. But you'll still take Soto above Bellinger, right?
Yeah. I'd still take Soto. I'd still take Tatis.
Luis Robert.
I think I'd go Bellinger there. I might be in the outlier. Oh wow! But I think I'd go Bellinger there.
Yeah, we'll differ on that one. I think I'm going Robert there. Then there's like Adelis Garcia.
Bellinger. Randy Rosarena, okay. Give me Bellinger.
I think I'd take Bellinger over a Rosarena. Adelis.
Oh, Yordan. Yeah, I mean, Yordan 2 is above him. That's another one.
So he's probably like right around the 10th
outfielder. Yeah, top 10 outfielder. Which I think is like end of the second, middle of the third round.
Yeah. I mean, if you're buying the average, then it's a no-brainer. But it's just like we've seen him go from a 300 hitter down to 240 in the past.
Granted, not with this profile, though. Not with this. I guess, yeah, his MVP year, he didn't strike out that much. But the shape of that MVP year, too, like he had 40 homers, like, I think like he had like 30 by like the middle of August, you know, like there were many more peaks and valleys in first round Cody Bellinger season. This seems much more sustainable, despite the fact that like the barrel rate and the hard hit percentage aren't what you want to see. But hey, this works for him, and I think if you get caught up on that, you might miss out on one of the best hitters in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the plate skills look amazing. I don't know. I think I'm still like maybe mid third round.
Okay.
Something. I don't think I could go second round on Bellinger, but what do you think? Gut instinct? Would you do a back of the second round on Bellinger?
Yeah, I would probably do back in the second round. That's where I would need to be if I'm like, especially on the turn, if I went like, you know, I don't know. It's hard because a lot of the top picks that you would take are outfielders too. So you might end up with like, you know, I could see doing a
Bobby Witt?
Like a Bobby Witt. Alonzo Bellinger sort of build like that, or you know, Bobby Witt. I don't think Strider will be there if you want to go pitcher, but
something like that,
back end of the pitch, second round pitcher, you know, like
Gausman,
Bellinger. Yeah, like that's a start that I could talk myself into for sure.
And he'll be with so it's a mutual option with the Cubs.
I would be shocked if he doesn't stay. It just seems like
After the deadline. Yeah. They're loving it. And that does make me feel better just because I think a change in environment, I would get a little nervous. But no, that's good dialogue.
He might get a payday though, right? Like some team, like he might not opt into that. Just, hey, I'm coming off of this amazing year. Like let me sign my contract. He's going to be... He just turned 28 2 months ago.
Couldn't you see him going to the Yankees?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that for sure.
Just the lefty power, the name.
That would be a great fit for them. That would be a great fit.
Oh, my God. That's like even though I'm scared of the organization and the fans and everything, it's like a dream to picture him there. So,
yeah.
Okay, so that's Bellinger. We got one more before break here, Steve. This is – similar to Bellinger, one that we have to assess where he would go in drafts, and it's CJ Abrams, who I know you were much higher on than I was, and mainly around steals. And you kind of talked me into it as we went on the show. And the steals, and actually Schwebze brought up Abrams as well. August, since we've talked about him, has been an interesting month because on one hand, he's hitting just he hit 223 in August. On the other hand, he stole 13 bases. So he is now up to, let's see, is it 40?
Yeah, 40 steals. Yeah, 38 going into the night. Yeah.
So a 245 average, 15 homers, 40 steals. Yeah, he had two tonight. And 68 runs, which is nice. The RBI is not nearly as nice at just, 52 on the season. So that's to a point where, like, you're taking an L on RBI in terms of, like, he's not five category by any stretch. So, CJ Abrams, Steve, what do we think? Is this, if you got 5 months of this next year, are you happy with where you drafted him? 223, but just stealing every other night.
I don't think that this is who he is as a batting average hitter. I think he is, you know, more of what the breakout CJ Abrams is. Like, I don't see him being, you know, this hitter that hit 230 for the first 2.5 months of the season. I see him as a guy who's figured it out and is now this 270, 280 hitter that he's been essentially since the start of July, right?
It looks a little lower, though. He had
327 in July, 223 in August. It's been a little bit lower, but
and the 216 in June before that. Yeah, I mean, so it's just
maybe it is closer to 250, but you know, the X stats sort of back that up too. But like, he's just been, you know, close to a 300 hitter his whole time in the minors. I have to think that there's some batting average improvement just as he matures as a hitter. He is still just 22 years old. He's about to turn 23 next month. So next year will be his age 23 season. Like, I am buying every share of CBA. If there's anyone that has batting average concern, like, that's fine by me. Like, this is, I think, a fantasy superstar in the making.
Yeah, you got to remind yourself that he's just 22 years old. And the runs, you would imagine, should look better. Although he doesn't walk a ton, just 4%. So that's
the Nationals. Yeah, that's actually, you could see the sort of the framework there with some of the players that they have. Like, there should be some improvement. And, you know, RBIs are a fickle thing. Like, you know, that's more situational. I know it's not the greatest situation, but there could be a year where he's better than a zero. Right? But I'm more impressed with the fact that, like, this guy has 15 homers and 513 plate appearances and has been on a pace to steal. Like, he's been on Esteban Ruiz pace the last 3 months with steals. Right, yeah. He in April he had three steals. In May he had three steals. In June he had three steals. He had three steals the first 3 months. Then he had 16, 13. He's got two in September, or four now. I think counting tonight. So, yeah, this is like Billy Hamilton that could hit for power and for a little bit more average, I think.
You know what name was coming to mind for me looking at this profile is Jonathan VR.
That kind of throws a little cold water on it a little bit, I guess.
It does, but like, I think that's the, I mean, VR had that
maybe
that 2016
maybe a more
year.
Sustainable Jonathan VR, which is a really good thing.
I mean, but those are the questions that I have a little bit just on, like, yes, it could look like 19 homers and 60 steals and bat 285, but then you also could get anything in between, which is what I'm nervous about. Like, if you look at VR in 2018, a 260 batting average, 14 homers, 35 steals. I could totally see that happening.
None of the quality of contact or expected stats really jump off the page. I mean, it is good that he doesn't swing and miss that much or strike out that much, but
that's true. He doesn't strike really out as much as VR.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like the low barrel rate, obviously the speed. Yeah, that's just one that I was thinking of. And maybe this is because I've been burnt by a VR in the past, mm-hmm. at like that year that he was, you know, late third round or whatever it was. So let's shift to that discussion. We were just talking Bellinger. What do you feel? I mean, if he is a upside 50 steal guy and he's somewhere between 10 to 20 homers, the batting average could be anywhere from 240 to 270. With the Nats, they're not great. Does this seem like third round, fourth round?
I'm pulling up the last show's podcast that we did, the Deadpool Hitter draft board. Probably should have done that or put this in our rundown.
That's fine. It's a loose show.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just to see where these guys went. And before I have it pulled up, I'm going to guess that he went in the second round.
That early? Oh, my gosh.
I'm
going to
guess
he went top
30.
Okay. I was going to say 46 overall.
Okay. So he went... Oh, wow. A little bit later than I thought.
That's good news for you, though.
He went in the fifth round.
Fifth round. And it's a 12-teamer?
Yeah. It was a 15-teamer. He was the eighth pick in the fifth round.
So he went 68th overall.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a couple weeks ago?
It was August 23rd. So.
Okay. During the lull, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's probably a good sign for you if you're targeting him. Because
Matt
McClain
or C.J. Abrams?
I just like McClain as a hitter more.
Yeah, but what about for fantasy?
I don't know, man. 5x5. Let me pull up McClain here. It's been 90 games, 16 homers, 14 steals, 290. A lot more strikeouts, but he does walk ballpark. I think I'm going McClain.
Okay. Cedric Mullins or CJ Abrams?
That's a good one, though. Ooh. I think I like Abrams on the ascent there versus an aging Mullins.
Mullins went 9 picks before him. He went about 20 picks before him. McClain about 25 picks before Abrams. So, it's an interesting debate. Almost a full round, so... Sorry, like 16 picks for McClain. Nine
picks honestly,
for
outfield might be more of a priority too than short.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's fair. I don't know. I just think that as we get into draft season, people are going to see this unbelievable steal total with a high teens homer total, and you know a batting average that may have been buoyed by one hot month, but. A much better batting average in the overall second half than the year. And I think that there is going to be some serious helium with Abrams. Bellinger, for reference, went... Did he possibly not go in those top 7 rounds? That would be crazy.
No way.
Unless he's listed as a first baseman. No, I don't think he did. But I think if we redid that draft,
what?
It would.
Are you doing like a command find on?
No, I have it up. I have it up on. I have it up on my phone. I have it up, and it's a screenshot of a picture. Unless he's listed as our first baseman.
Yeah, he might have been.
Yeah, he did. Like, he was listed as first baseman. He went in the sixth round.
Sixth round. Okay, yeah. So way later.
Yeah, yeah. But I think
I like the value on Bellinger.
There, Abrams, yes.
I feel like the soonest I would probably take Abrams would be like the fourth or fifth, I think. But I do agree that there's you're getting Abrams on the rise there at age 22. Best season yet. Best power output yet. Like you said, he's running at like, you know, a Billy Hamilton rate right now. So it is very tempting. So that's Abrams, Bellinger, Chaz McCormick, Nolan Jones. We will get to a few more names that we kind of steered in the right direction. But first, we're going to take our ad break and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, we're running a little long. I want to pair these two together with Ha-Seong Kim and Bryson Stott. So I got to start by saying that I think I'm changing my tune. I've been fading Stott and admitted on this podcast that I'm overlooking him, that I'm not excited by him. He, like Abrams, has a very low kind of hard hit barrel rate, but the 15.2% K rate is even better than Abrams. The walk rate is a little bit better than Abrams. And in terms of the production on the season,
higher sprint speed too, which is kind of shocking.
He's fast. He's got a .294 batting average, 14 homers, 27 steals, and the XBA is .275. So this is like the hit tool that we're wish casting on Abrams. You're giving up a little bit of speed. I think the power is probably tomato tomato. So I'm just at a point where I think I got to stop pretending that Bryson Stott is not impressive here, because he hits to all fields. He doesn't strike out much. He has a really good hit tool, and he's running, and he's a non-zero in power. Are you ready to go there with me on Stott, or do you still have your doubts?
I'm ready to go there too. I've been a doubter, and I've been wrong. I guess maybe we could have lumped this one in and the ones that we were wrong on.
We brought overall, it up. We had a similar discussion where we were like, is it legit? What's going on? But yeah, I mean, I think we were looking at what he had done in May with the .255 average and thinking that was closer to Stott. And then July was the .337, .268 in August. But in that month, 5 home runs. So the power really ticked up. And yeah, I mean, since May, his steals totals 5, 6 in June, 5 in July, 6 in August. So, yeah, I mean, he should end up this year pretty much being, you know, a 2030 plus guy and hitting close to 300. So, yeah, I think Stott is impressive. And then Kim on the other side, not as young, Stott being 25. Kim is at age 27, so a little bit older, but he's finally kind of proving the value that we were all hoping for when he came over. Kim is a little bit lower on the batting average with a .271, 17 homers, 31 steals, caught stealing 8 times, so he's definitely running. And yeah, in the month of August, since we last talked, he also is hitting similar clip, .270, 8 steals in that time, 3 homers. So these guys, same position. What do we like at second base between Bryson Stott and also your thoughts on Ha-Seong Kim?
Super similar, like just profiles overall. It's kind of eerie. Like, not the greatest quality contact metrics, but good sweet spot, good plate discipline. Kim walks a lot more, which is helpful, and especially for the steals too. That's probably why he's got, a lead on him in steals, and he has 31 bases. It's close. Maybe this is a draft this, not that, like Kim or Stott versus Abrams next year. Although Kim did go pretty high in the leading mock draft. He went in the fourth round in that two-way draft. Stott was not drafted in the first 7 rounds there. So yeah, leading off, but I don't know. I like Stott's progression overall, like year over year, like improvement in power, improvement in batting average, improvement in K rate. So it's just been like I see the path for Stott, and I think you're sort of buying. I could see you, but I think Stott's best seasons are ahead of him, whereas Kim might have just had his best season, if that makes sense. And yeah, I think maybe that there could be some room for growth with power for Stott too, especially since he is a pull fly ball guy. Like his spray chart, all of his home runs are pulled to right field there, and Philly's a great place to hit as opposed to Petco. So I'd lean Stott. I think the ADP are going to be starkly different. I think that that Kim will be higher. But yeah, I'm in on Stott after being out on him for so long. Kind of blinded by a bad Bauer right there. And like, if you do that with Cody Bellinger too, like you would have been on the wrong side of that one there as well.
Yeah, and the batting order is relevant this year, but next year, like, I don't know, how long are they going to keep Schwarber at leadoff? I know he's been hot. It's just so unconventional. I don't know. On the season, it's unfortunate that Stott is kind of cemented as, like, the number five hitter.
Yeah, but that's not like, that bad of a – it's not a – you know, in that lineup.
It's good for
like,
RBIs.
Yeah. There's no bad spot in that lineup, really.
Yeah, and maybe they let him run there a little bit more than if, you know, Bryce Harper was right behind him. So, yeah, I think the draft that's not that is just depending on ADP, because if Kim is going in the fourth round, I think I'll take the discount on Stott for sure.
Agreed.
So, yeah. Okay. Moving over to pitchers, I mean, the one, Cole Reagans, that you were early on it. You know, the Discord was talking up Cole Reagans. And after the trade deadline where Aroldis Chapman and Cole Reagans moved to Kansas City, when we talked about him, he had 17 innings with the Royals. He had that 11 strikeout outing, and it got our attention to a point where we were like, we got to talk about him on the show. Since then, it's just looked like the league winner, probably the league winning story on the pitching side this year. 30 innings pitched. This is since we talked about him on August 10th. 30 innings pitched, a 1.8 ERA, a 0.90 whip, 36% strikeout rate, and a 6% walk rate, which was better because we were talking about how I forget who we paired him with. I think it might have been Silseth, that they both had some control issues, but it's looked even better for Reagans. We love the changeup, all good things. Yeah, what can we add on Reagans other than the fact that he is kind of the up-and-comer breakout that will be a wide-awake sleeper?
Yeah, that's the only thing. It's like, is he going to go so high next year that there's, like, no value to it whatsoever? He's got a really, really tough schedule coming up. His next two starts are at Toronto, then versus Houston. So if he, like, continues to do what he does the rest of the year, then, yeah, you're probably not going to get any bit of a discount on him whatsoever. And it may be like getting into a ridiculous where you're drafting as like an SP2 already on just this basically half a season. But if he's anything less than that, like I am going to still be all in on him next year. Basically as long as he's not in like the top five rounds. Anything after that?
I don't think he will be. I feel like if history repeats itself, I feel like he is going to go in the same type of zone that like Shane McClanahan went that one year, that Hunter Green went. Like it always seems like it's right around like ADP 95 to 110. Yep. Nick Lodolo.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll get pushed up, but yeah, that feels like the range. And if it is that range, I'm in.
Same. That's Shane McClanahan from 2022.
But you're saying if it's like pick 60 if overall.
If it's like
fifth round.
Yeah, if it's like, I don't know, like where, I guess Strider went earlier this year, but if it's where, you know, if you're around like, you know,
what about like a Joe? I know Joe Musgrove
like,
got injured.
Like Aaron Nola or Joe Musgrove. If you're in that area, then yeah, I might be out, just because the cost is so high. But anything else, if he's being drafted as an SP2, SP3 essentially, I'm probably
on the list. Nick Pollock has him at SP33.
Yeah,
this week.
If he's ranked around there and being drafted around there, I'm in. I think he's going to finish higher with health than SP33. I think he's that good, but we'll see where the market dictates that price in just a few short weeks here.
Yeah, good call out on the matchups too, because I remember when we did talk about him, we were
he's taken
up
advantage of some really, really good matchups. Like he's faced
White Sox, Pirates. Yep. I think the A's were in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at Toronto,
There was a good Cubs good start there too. And Cubs have been a great offense. So
yeah. No, that's a good one. So Reagan's there, and yeah, like we said, it's one that. Every analyst will be kind of circling as the breakout for next year, you would imagine. So moving down to a couple lower priority ones, but Ryan Jeffers, I know we had kind of the catcher mm-hmm. pairing, Steve, when we talked about Freddie Fermin, Ryan Jeffers. Fermin, the strikeout rate's kind of ticked up. It's been okay, but not noteworthy. Jeffers, on the other hand, has had a really good power August. I think he's got, don't have it right in front of me, I think it's 5 homers in August.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Jeffers was originally your guy. What are you kind of seeing here with, you know, you liked him to begin with, and now he's done nothing to change that. He's actually bolstered it, really. The raw power looks great. But in August, 246 average and 876 OPS with 5 homers, 14 RBIs. What do we think on Jeffers here? Some fringy catcher one?
Yeah, I think Jeffers is a really good catcher one, you know, back end catcher one target that is a great source of power. Like whenever he's been healthy, the last 2 years at least, he's just barreled up the ball. That's what he's done. Yeah, there's a really high strikeout rate, and he's probably not a 269 hitter. It's probably closer to the XBA of 220, but that's Cal Raleigh, and Cal Raleigh's been a good catcher over the last 2 years. Jeffers' barrel rate last year was 13.2%. This year it's 11.3%. So good stuff. A lot of power, and I think that he's coming into his age 26 season and could kind of be slept on because he's missed some time. And if the Twins go into it next year with him as the clear-cut catcher one, which I think they should, there could be some sneaky fantasy value, and especially great in 2C leagues. Like if Ryan Jeffers is your second catcher, I think that's a great spot to be in.
Yeah, it's a good NFBC one, mm-hmm. For sure. I think best ball as well with a guy who gets hot like that, I think is a good one. And then the last one in this bunch that we got is Davis Schneider, who at the time when we brought him up, it was kind of this, who the heck is this guy? Mm-hmm. He had the grand slam, I believe. And then he cooled off considerably, probably because I added him, and he went like 0 for 20 or something like that. And recently, a nice little bounce back for Davis Schneider, where he has hit safely in the last 11 games that he started. And the barrel rate is now at 21%, which I know is small sample size, just 42 batted balls. But like we talked about a Brandon Drury type of comp, and I don't know. I mean, it's interesting.
Close to a stabilization point, man. 50 batted balls is the is where you want to hit. 275
XBA. Yeah. So now he's got
425 X WOBA. Like, you know, on the new Savant sliders, like. You know, it's grayed out if they don't qualify, but that's like 100th percentile. Same with the X slug at 586. So crazy,
yeah,
crazy
so this
stuff.
Is, I guess we owe him the actual stat line. In 20 games, 7 home runs, a .385 batting average, and a .1358 OPS. I mean, if you counted on 140 game pace there, he'd be at 49 home runs. So this is Davis Schneider. I think we got to walk down expectations a little bit. But where is he hitting in the lineup, and is he playing every
day? There's been games where he's played third, started hit third. Yeah, he's hitting third. Like, I don't know. I think this might be something to at least pay attention to for next year. And it's kind of like a microcosm of just the season, right? Like, this guy starts off hot, then has a cold streak and doesn't play, then comes back and is hot again. Like, if you did in April, like, if you added him for the hot streak, then dropped him, like, now this is when, you know, your rival added him and is now reaping all the benefits. It kind of is funny how this is a microcosm of, you know, maybe be a little bit more patient with those sort of guys in the beginning of the season. But great story. I mean, he was so good in the minors this year. And I think there might be more real than just and then the season hot streak. Definitely something I'm going to pay attention to and try to grab if he's at a super late price in late rounds next year. But if he keeps this up, maybe he's going to chew up some draft boards.
It kind of feels like, and I know it's a smaller sample size, so it won't be as priced up in the draft rooms, but Joey Meneses a little bit, just in terms of the how excited everyone was, and it was like, wait, who? I don't know. I mean, it feels like he'll be one that you could probably get kind of right around that, like, pick 200 and beyond next year. And it's not a bad dart throw here. I mean, if he's still hitting third, it'll be even pricier than that. But yeah, he's yet another one that, like, we saw it. We said, let's keep an eye on what he's doing. And then when you look at August and you see, yeah, he rounded out with 6 homers and a .1420 OPS. Like, until he cools off, I think he has to have our attention for just 24 years old for Davis Schneider. So we will get to a recap of some of our misses, Steve, and hold up the accountability there. But we're going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, a little less fun on this section, but talking some of the guys that we, you know, either you or I or both, we're excited about that have not gone as well. And Mickey Moniak is one name on that list to start us off. He hit 300 in May, or over 300 in May, June, and July. I know we were waiting for kind of the sky to fall, and it did in August, where he's just had a .202 batting average. And for the most part, it's the strikeouts that are the issue. Is this just, you know, reality setting in, or do you think there's still long-term a good hitter in this profile here?
I think this is a bit of the reality setting in. Like, the writing was on the wall with the past strikeout rates, even though he has improved it a little bit this year. It's still at 35%. And I don't think he has, like, the raw power and just overall hit tool, despite a high strikeout rate, that Nolan Jones has. So, it's a bit of a cautionary tale. He's still barreling up the ball, so I think could be a good late-round dart for a power-speed combo, but I don't think he'll hit close to the .280 again that he's at this year, where it's just been in a nosedive since those first 3 months of the season. So, a bit of a cautionary tale with the plate skills. Like, the chase rate, whiff rate, K rate, walk rate are all bottom percentiles of the league. So, those are important stats too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it, like you said, the K rate the past two seasons, 43%, 39%, and he's got it down ish to 35%, but yeah, you're right, the max EV doesn't, like, jump off or anything like that, so Moniak, he's still young. If he makes improvements with the plate discipline is where it's got to start. And then from there, there could be a player here because, yeah, power speed's not bad. So that is Moniak. Andrew Abbott was one that's, again, it's like, you know, prospect growth, certainly pitching growth is not linear. And he came up. He didn't have the strikeouts that he had in the minors. And then he was showing all the results that were kind of confusing. And here we go in August. We're saying, let's pay close attention to what happens the rest of the way. I think at one point in time, he was like looked at as like a top 35 SP, where he would be like an SP 2 or 3. And in August, he's had a 6.08 ERA with a 1.73 whip. So not good at all. On the bright side, the best strikeout percent of the season he had in August. So, again, interesting use case. I don't know if we're going to stay away, Steve, with the ballpark, with the age, but his season line will kind of mask this because he's still got a 3.22 ERA and a 1.20 whip. Are you kind of scooting away from any Andrew Abbott shares in the off season, or do you think this is all kind of part of the growth process for him?
I'm really, really torn on what to do with Andrew Abbott.
Same.
You know, the walk rate is a little bit high. The K rates are encouraging. Gives up a good amount of hard hits, but like, you know, the ERA estimators are good. The XBA is good. I know that's not the greatest stat to look at for pitchers, but the chase and whiff percentage are kind of middling. It's a very, very confusing profile for me. I do not know what to do with Andrew Abbott next year.
So in August, he gave up 6 earned to the Nationals. He gave up 2 earned against the Pirates, 2 earned against the Guardians, 3 earned against the Angels, and 3 earned against the Giants. So it's not the toughest schedule, mm-hmm. honestly.
I think that's the fact that it's a questionable profile, and the fact that he pitches half his games in Cincinnati is enough for me to be out.
Yeah. If he was around late enough to be like an SP 5, mm-hmm. I would be in. Like where he Nick talks about the 4 for floor and then throw the darts. Unfortunately, I think you'll probably have to draft him in that, you know, 4 for floor, like top 130 range. And I think that's going to be too pricey for me. So yeah, I think I'll probably be out. But it is encouraging that in his most recent start against the Cubs, he went 6 1/3 with 5 strikeouts. So the K's went back down, but just 1 earned run. And only 2 walks in that outing. So, man, kind of a conundrum. I mean, I guess on the bright side is we're seeing him do good things at different times. So,
and like if this is his lumps, like if this is the growth pain or the growing pains, right? Like that's a good thing. Like we talk about that all the time with pitchers.
There is something to be said about the fact that we know he has stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like if he can pair that, improve the walk rate, like I do think he's the upside is there and you could see the path forward. The bad side is the ballpark and
the walk rate and potentially the walk rate, the home runs. Yeah.
So that's Abbott. More head scratchers. Tyler Wells, Steve, and also Chase Silseth, we had on our list of kind of pitchers to watch. Silseth with the injury, and Wells
never even got really called back up, right? Tyler Wells,
right? And we were kind of wondering what was going on there because they kind of yanked. I know he had a few rough starts in July, but pre All-Star break, a 3.18 ERA and a 0.93 WHIP with a strikeout per inning. So this one is just kind of like, I don't know. I mean, we can say it's a miss from opportunity, but I'll be pretty interested to see what happens with Wells. Like, are the Orioles just going to, I want to peek at what his like contract situation is. Because if they're just moving on, he could be a really interesting pitcher in a new environment. Let's see. Arbitration eligible in 2024. Age 29, though. Like, it's kind of, you know,
I could see him being moved, considering the Orioles, you know.
Yeah, they still got Fall and Grayson Rodriguez, all that stuff.
Part of a package to upgrade their pitching. Maybe trading a hitting prospect and then Wells, if someone likes him, for a starter upgrade. So, yeah, that's potential. But, yeah, the fact that they must know something, like there must be something going on with what they wanted to work on that never came to fruition.
At least recently, there's been arm fatigue down
in
AAA.
Arm fatigue, too,
So that's probably part of it. So
for sure.
Yep, that's another one. All right, Steve, Christopher Morel, we can spend a little bit of time on this one because we had him paired with Bellinger and Chaz McCormick. We were kind of looking at those three, saying, how would you rank them, all that stuff. And Morel has kind of, in his own roller coaster way, we've seen the dip of the roller coaster. And the K rate has been 37% in both July and in August. But yeah, he's having one of those kind of what goes up, what must come down type of moments here. Do you weather the storm? Is it best ball only for Morel? Because in August, he's hitting he hit 149. And in September, it's been 214 so far.
Yeah, it gets so bad with him that the Cubs don't play him. Like, he sat, I think, 3 of the last 5 games. I know he had, like, a big pinch hit home run on Tuesday night. But he's not a great fielder. So, like, when he has a stretch like that, he sits. And the fact that, like, the Cubs are good now, it's not like last year where they could just run him out and, you know, say go get him. They're right. Actually playing for something. So when he's in a slump like that, like, you know, there was a stretch of the season where Morel was like, it felt like he homered like every single night. And I know it's been a good year, but he's only had 20 homers. So outside of that stretch, there hasn't been that much. It's
just
tough.
1 month.
I think it's just a best ball play. And I think that, you know, I was talking myself into like, hey, he did this last year. He adjusted, got set down, never adjusted back. This year he did it again. They adjusted, had slumped, then he came back and was hot again. But now this is happening again, and it seems like a bigger slump than he had in the first half of the season too. So it's hard. Like, there's going to be stretches where Morel is number one ranked player. Like he was, like, right, you know, for 2 weeks this year. But I guess until I see it at a much more consistent basis, it's hard to put any stock in him being a full 6 month asset. Maybe that changes. Maybe there's some, you know, you see the growth a little bit year over year, but the downs are so bad that it's hard to it's hard to not drop him right in these stretches like he had in August and now through September, through the first week of September.
Yeah, no, that's a good assessment. I mean, he does walk a lot more than you would think with a 33% K rate.
Yeah.
The barrel rate at 15%, like, I think I probably speak for both of us that as soon as he's just 24 years old, it's pretty obvious what he needs to improve on with just the chase rate, the contact rate. If the Cubs, if we have any rumors of, you know, a swing change or an approach change or anything like that, the upside is so high with just the raw power, despite, you know, being 145 pounds.
That no way that's right, right? I know that's what it's listed on Savant, but 145 pounds, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, to have that much power with that frame, it's like, I guess all that to be said, he's one that I'm going to be a sucker for as well, if we hear anything. But until then, the valleys are too low. So, yeah, I think lesson learned there that, like, a McCormick, Steady Eddie has been much more productive than Morrell, who we kind of had them ranked, I think. Mm-hmm. Nolan Jones, Morrell, and then McCormick.
Yeah.
When we did this exercise.
McCormick hit a pinch hit homer tonight. 20 on the year so far. Now tied with Morrell.
There you go. There you go. The last one, not of much note, but we had Bryce Terang. We were kind of squinting and saying, is, you know, he started really hot, then he had a decent run before we were looking at the is it legit chart. So in August, it's just been mediocrity, really. I guess the six steals are pretty nice.
Yeah,
for Bryce Terang, but yeah,
594 OPS though is, you know, borderline. Not in the majors.
Yeah.
I think Terang had like two nice weeks, and it just happened to be that we talked about him after both of those times that he had two nice right. weeks this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, swing and a miss there for us.
Yep. Okay, well, that rounds us out, guys. Just a little recap show. We will still be doing once a week through the rest of the season. I know we just got a couple more episodes before we can do kind of full season reviews, kind of our bold predictions recap, some award-esque shows on most surprising, things like that. And will be a lot of fun. And before long, we'll be into full off-season mode, looking at next season's ADP, too early mock draft, all that good stuff. But that rounds us out for episode 116. As always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks, guys. Good luck down the home stretch.